Once there was a woman who longed for a child of her own, so she went to a witch to ask for help. "Old witch," she said, "I would dearly like to have a child of my own. Can you help me?" "Ah, that's easy," said the witch. "Here's a barley corn for you. Take it home and plant it in a pot, then wait and see what happens." "Oh, thank you," said the woman. She hurried home and planted the grain in a pot. At once, a flower began to grow. "What a pretty flower," exclaimed the woman, and she bent down to kiss the petals. As she did, the petals burst open. There, sitting in the middle of the flower, was a little girl. "How tiny and delicate she is," said the woman. "Why, she is no bigger than the tip of my thumb. I will call her Thumbelina." Thumbelina was very contented. At night, she slept under a rose petal in a polished walnut shell. By day, she rowed herself across a bowl of water the woman had put out for her. As she rowed, she sang. She had the sweetest voice you'd ever heard. One night, while Thumbelina was asleep, a toad hopped through the window. "Now there be a handsome wife for my son," the big wet toad croaked, thumping down onto the table where Thumbelina lay. She picked up the walnut shell and hopped with it back to her home in the mud by the edge of a stream. But croak, croak, breck, keck, kecks was all the toad's son said when he saw Thumbelina. "Shh, don't speak so loudly, you might wake her," his mother said. "We must put her somewhere where she cannot escape." "I know," she said when she had thought for a time. "I'll put her on a water lily out in the stream." So Toad swam out to the center of the stream and set the walnut shell down on the leaf of the biggest water lily. When Thumbelina woke and she saw where she was, she began to cry. All she could see around her was water. "How will I ever get back to my land?" she said sadly. Back on the bank, the toad was very busy, carrying rushes and yellow water flowers from the stream to decorate the room where her son and his bride would live. "How happy my son and his new bride will be," she thought. Then the toads swam out to the leaf in the stream where Thumbelina was perched. The old toad made a deep bow to Thumbelina. "This is my son," she said. "You are to marry him and live with him in our fine house under the mud." Croak, croak, breck, keck, kecks was all that her son could say. After the toads had swum away, Thumbelina sat and cried on the leaf. "I do not want to marry a big ugly toad and live in a house with him under the mud," she said. Below the lily, the fishes heard her and popped up their heads to look at her. "What a pretty little girl," they said to each other. "We cannot let her marry an ugly creature like that." So they swam up to the stalk that held the leaf and gnawed away at it until at last the lily floated free. Down the stream the lily glided. Thumbelina was happy. "The toads will never catch me now," she thought. The sun shone brightly and the water glittered like gold. She did not see the beetle fly overhead. Then all of a sudden she felt a pair of claws grip her around the waist and lift her off the lily leaf. Up the beetle flew into a tree, Thumbelina still clasped tightly in its claws. Thumbelina was very frightened, but there was nothing she could do. The beetle put her down on a large leaf. "You are very pretty," it said. The other beetles who lived in the tree came to look at her. "Why, she's only got two legs," scoffed one. "And she hasn't got any feelers," snorted another, waving his about proudly. "And look how thin her waist is. Ugh, she is not pretty, not pretty at all," they said. The beetle who found her decided that they were right, and so Thumbelina was put back down on the ground. All summer, Thumbelina lived alone in the forest. She wove herself a bed out of blades of grass and hung it like a hammock under a dock leaf to shelter from the rain. When she was hungry, she ate honey and pollen from the flowers. And when she was thirsty, she drank the early morning dew off the leaves. But summer passed and the days grew colder. The birds who had sung in the trees flew away. The leaves withered and dropped, and Thumbelina shivered with cold. Snow began to fall. Every snowflake that fell felt like a shovelful on tiny Thumbelina. She wrapped herself in a dry leaf, but that did not warm her. Wandering about, Thumbelina found herself at last outside the forest in a cornfield. The corn had been cut and only stubby stalks were left in the frozen ground. There among them she saw a door. Behind it, in a cozy little house, lived a field mouse. "Please may I have a piece of barley corn to eat," Thumbelina begged the field mouse. "I have had nothing to eat for 2 days." "You poor thing," said the field mouse, who had a kind heart. "Come inside, come inside." The field mouse so enjoyed Thumbelina's company that she told her she could stay. "But you must clean my house and tell me stories," she said. "I like to listen to stories." One day, the field mouse told Thumbelina that her neighbor, a mole, was coming to visit them. "He is very rich and clever," she told Thumbelina. "He would make a fine husband. He cannot see very well, but he lives in a big house and wears a black velvet coat." Thumbelina didn't care how rich and clever he was. She didn't want to marry a mole. But when the mole came to visit, she sang so sweetly that the mole fell in love with her. But he was cautious and said nothing to Thumbelina. He told them he had dug a passage that linked their houses together. "You may go along it whenever you like," he said. "Follow me and I will show you the way." He took a piece of rotten wood which glowed in the dark and led them across the tunnel. "There is a bird in the passage," he told them, "but don't be afraid, for it is dead." When they reached the place where the bird lay, the mole thrust his nose up through the ceiling to let in the daylight. Now they could see the bird clearly. It was a swallow, its beautiful wings pressed close against its sides, its legs and head huddled into its feathers. Thumbelina felt so sorry for it, but the mole shoved the bird aside with his stubby legs. "There's one we won't have to listen to anymore," he said. "I don't like birds. They make an awful din." "Quite right," said the field mouse. "Yet everyone thinks so highly of them. I cannot think why." Thumbelina said nothing, but as soon as their backs were turned, she bent down and gently parted the feathers on the swallow's head and kissed its closed eyes. "Perhaps this is the bird that sang so sweetly to me in the summer," she thought. "How happy its song made me." That night, Thumbelina could not sleep, so she got out of bed and plaited a small blanket of hay. Then she crept back down the passage and spread it over the bird. "Farewell, pretty bird," she said. "Thank you for singing to me in the summer, when the trees were green and the sun shone all day." Then she laid her head on its heart. "Knock," she heard. "Knock, knock." She jumped back, startled. The bird's heart was beating. It was alive. Thumbelina was frightened. The bird was so big and she so small. But she tucked the little blanket closer over the bird's head to warm it. The next night she came back to see the bird again. It opened its eyes. "Thank you," it said faintly. "You have saved my life. Soon I will be able to fly away." "No," insisted Thumbelina. "It is too cold outside for you to leave. Stay here, I will look after you." All winter long, the bird stayed in the passage. Then spring came and it flew out of the hole in the roof. Thumbelina was very sad as she watched it fly away. She had grown very fond of the bird. And the sight of the sun saddened her, for she rarely saw it now. "You are to marry the mole," the field house told her one day. Thumbelina felt very sad. She did not like the mole at all. He did not care for the things she did. He liked the dark and she liked the sun. She did not want to live under the ground in the dark. The day of the wedding arrived. Thumbelina stood in the doorway to look at the sunshine one last time. She heard a bird sing in the sky overhead. It was the swallow. How happy they were to see each other again. "Come away with me," the swallow said when Thumbelina had told him her sad tale. "I will take you to a land where the sun always shines." Thumbelina climbed up onto the swallow's back and tied her sash to one of his feathers, and away they flew, up over trees and lakes and snowy mountains, where the air was so cold that Thumbelina shivered and crept under the swallow's feathers for warmth. Then she felt the air grow warmer. Below her now she could see waving palms, and the air was sweet and full of butterflies. Down the swallow flew and landed on the ground near the pillars of a marble palace. Vines twisted up its columns. Swallows flew back and forth. One of the columns had fallen and lay on the ground in pieces. In between the broken pieces, beautiful white flowers grew. "My nest is high up on a marble column, but you will be better down here on one of these flowers," the swallow told Thumbelina. "I should like that," Thumbelina said. The swallow set her down gently on one of the flowers. There, in the middle of its petals, stood a little prince, a gold crown on his head. He was as fine and delicate as Thumbelina herself. Shining wings sprouted from his shoulders. He was the king of the flower people. In every flower, a tiny person lived, and he was the king of them all. "He's very beautiful," Thumbelina thought. "Isn't she lovely?" thought the prince. "I would like to marry her." He took the crown from his head and put it on hers. "Marry me and be queen of all the flowers," he said. Thumbelina was so happy. All the flower people brought her presents. One of them fixed wings to her back so that she could fly from flower to flower like them. "You shall not be called Thumbelina anymore," the prince said to her. "Your name will be Maya." That summer, the swallow bid a sad farewell to Thumbelina and flew back to his nest under the window of a teller of fairy tales. "Listen," he said to him, "I have a tale to tell you." And that is how we came to know the story of Thumbelina. The end. Once upon a time, there was a dear little girl who was loved by everyone who looked at her, but most of all by her grandmother, and there was nothing that she would not have given to the child. Once she gave her a little cap of red velvet, which suited her so well that she would never wear anything else. So she was always called Little Red Riding Hood. One day, her mother said to her, "Come, Little Red Riding Hood, here is a piece of cake and a bottle of wine. Take them to your grandmother. She is ill and weak, and they will do her good. Set out before it gets hot, and when you are going, walk nicely and quietly, and do not run off the path, or you may fall and break the bottle, and then your grandmother will get nothing. And when you go into her room, don't forget to say good morning, and don't peep into every corner before you do it." "I will take great care," said Little Red Riding Hood to her mother, and gave her hand on it. The grandmother lived out in the wood, half a league from the village, and just as Little Red Riding Hood entered the wood, a wolf met her. Little Red Riding Hood did not know what a wicked creature he was, and was not at all afraid of him. "Good day, Little Red Riding Hood," said he. "Thank you kindly, wolf." "Whither away so early, Little Red Riding Hood?" "To my grandmother's." "What have you got in your apron?" "Cake and wine. Yesterday was baking day, so poor sick grandmother is to have something good to make her stronger." "Where does your grandmother live, Little Red Riding Hood?" "A good quarter of a league farther on in the wood. Her house stands under the three large oak trees. The nut trees are just below." "You surely must know it," replied Little Red Riding Hood. The wolf thought to himself, "What a tender young creature. What a nice, plump mouthful she will be better to eat than the old woman. I must act craftily so as to catch both." So he walked for a short time by the side of Little Red Riding Hood, and then he said, "See, Little Red Riding Hood, how pretty the flowers are about here. Why do you not look around? I believe, too, that you do not hear how sweetly the little birds are singing. You walk gravely along as if you were going to school, while everything else out here in the wood is merry." Little Red Riding Hood raised her eyes, and when she saw the sunbeams dancing here and there through the trees, and pretty flowers growing everywhere, she thought, "Suppose I take Grandmother a fresh nosegay? That would please her too. It is so early in the day that I shall still get there in good time. And so she ran from the path into the wood to look for flowers. And whenever she had picked one, she fancied that she saw a still prettier one farther on and ran after it and so got deeper and deeper into the wood. Meanwhile, the wolf ran straight to the grandmother's house and knocked at the door. "Who is there?" "Little Red Riding Hood," replied the wolf. "She is bringing cake and wine. Open the door." "Lift the latch," called out the grandmother. "I am too weak. I cannot get up." The wolf lifted the latch, the door sprang open, and without saying a word, he went straight to the grandmother's bed and devoured her. Then he put on her clothes, dressed himself in her cap, laid himself in bed, and drew the curtains. Little Red Riding Hood, however, had been running about picking flowers, and when she had gathered so many that she could carry no more, she remembered her grandmother and set out on the way to her. She was surprised to find the cottage door standing open, and when she went into the room, she had such a strange feeling that she said to herself, "Oh dear, how uneasy I feel today, and at other times I like being here with grandmother so much." She called out, "Good morning," but received no answer. So she went to the bed and drew back the curtains. There lay her grandmother with her cap pulled far over her face and looking very strange. "Oh, grandmother," she said, "what big ears you have." "The better to hear you with, my child," was the reply. "But grandmother, what big eyes you have," she said. "The better to see you with, my dear." "But grandmother, what large hands you have." "The better to hug you with." "Oh, but grandmother, what a terrible big mouth you have." "The better to eat you with." And scarcely had the wolf said this, than with one bound he was out of bed and swallowed up Little Red Riding Hood. When the wolf had appeased his appetite, he lay down again in the bed, fell asleep, and began to snore very loud. The huntsman was just passing the house and thought to himself, "How the old woman is snoring. I must just see if she wants anything." So he went into the room, and when he came to the bed, he saw that the wolf was lying in it. "Do I find you here, you old sinner?" said he. "I have long sought you." Then, just as he was going to fire at him, it occurred to him that the wolf might have devoured the grandmother, and that she might still be saved. So he did not fire, but took a pair of scissors, and began to cut open the stomach of the sleeping wolf. When he had made two snips, he saw the Little Red Riding Hood shining. And then he made two snips more, and the little girl sprang out, crying, "Ah, how frightened I have been, how dark it was inside the wolf." And after that, the aged grandmother came out alive also, but scarcely able to breathe. Little Red Riding Hood, however, quickly fetched great stones with which they filled the wolf's belly, and when he awoke, he wanted to run away, but the stones were so heavy that he collapsed at once and fell dead. Then all three were delighted. The huntsman drew off the wolf's skin and went home with it. The grandmother ate the cake and drank the wine which Little Red Riding Hood had brought, and revived. But Little Red Riding Hood thought to herself, "As long as I live, I will never by myself leave the path to run into the wood when my mother has forbidden me to do so." It is also related that once, when Little Red Riding Hood was again taking cakes to the old grandmother, another wolf spoke to her and tried to entice her from the path. Little Red Riding Hood, however, was on her guard and went straight forward on her way and told her grandmother that she had met the wolf and that he had said good morning to her, but with such a wicked look in his eyes that if they had not been on the public road, she was certain he would have eaten her up. "Well," said the grandmother, "we will shut the door that he may not come in." Soon afterwards, the wolf knocked and cried, "Open the door, grandmother. I am Little Red Riding Hood, and I am bringing you some cakes." But they did not speak or open the door, so the graybeard stole twice or thrice round the house, and at last jumped on the roof, intending to wait until Little Red Riding Hood went home in the evening, and then to steal after her and devour her in the darkness. but the grandmother saw what was in his thoughts. In front of the house was a great stone trough, so she said to the child, "Take the pail, Little Red Riding Hood. I made some sausages yesterday, so carry the water in which I boiled them to the trough." Little Red Riding Hood carried until the great trough was quite full. Then the smell of the sausages reached the wolf, and he sniffed and peeped down, and at last stretched out his neck so far that he could no longer keep his footing and began to slip, and slipped down from the roof straight into the great trough and was drowned. But Little Red Riding Hood went joyously home, and no one ever did anything to harm her again. The end.